almost feels like a scene out of The Godfather, but it's not. It's real, and it's alarming.
Sound the alarms. Sound the alarms.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's one reason.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it's not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
I do like The Godfather.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM, people-powered radio in L.A., and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Coming up shortly, amidst all of the madness, all of the insanity yesterday and the day before and continuing today, Donald Trump signed another executive order yesterday. This one to get to the bottom of all of that voter fraud that he says cost him the popular vote, which he lost by some 3,000 votes to Hillary Clinton last November. You will recall, I'm sure you recall it, Desi Doyen. Hello.
Yes.
That he actually said that he actually won the popular vote, as well as the Electoral College, but for anywhere from 3 to 5 million illegal votes that were cast last November.
Oh, yes, I remember.
There seems to be no actual evidence to support that. But he's still claiming it, and so now he's signed an executive order to create a commission to look into all of that fraud, to crack this case wide open. And, well, as you might have guessed, I may have a few thoughts on that.
Really?
Yes.
What a
shock. And on who he is putting onto that phony commission in just a few minutes. And I suspect it's some stuff that you have not heard elsewhere on this, even where you can find people complaining about this commission. This is one aspect I suspect others have not yet brought up. So we'll get to that shortly. In the meantime, let's start with the insanity. The President Donald Trump's thumbs were working overtime Friday morning, as Allegra Kirkland writes. He fired off a string of remarkable tweets on Friday morning, threatening to cancel future press briefings. And again, accusing Democrats of fabricating a story that members of his campaign colluded with Russian operatives to sway the 2016 election. The first of his early morning tweets today, he said, again, the story that there was collusion between the Russians and Trump campaign was fabricated by Dems as an excuse for losing the election. The U.S. intelligence community has concluded that Russia intervened in the presidential race to help Trump win, though they have not actually put out any evidence to that end. But the FBI and two bipartisan congressional committees are investigating whether any of his aides colluded in some fashion with Russia as well. After accusing the fake media of working overtime today, he then pivoted to the White House's official explanation now for his sudden decision to fire FBI Director James Comey on Tuesday. The president suggested it might be a good pretext to cancel all future press briefings. He said, as a very active president with lots of things happening, it's not possible for my surrogates to stand at podium with perfect accuracy. Of course, he's essentially throwing his press secretary and deputy press secretary under the bus because they explained his firing to be due to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, the recommendation that Comey failed last year in his investigation of the Hillary Clinton email business. But now he has admitted, as Trump himself did yesterday on NBC, that it actually had nothing to do with that. He said he was going to fire him all along. And he referred to the Trump-Russia investigation. So, you know, he's a very active president. So the surrogates can't possibly stand at podium with perfect accuracy. He said maybe the best thing to do would be to cancel all future press briefings and hand out written responses for the sake of accuracy.
Yeah, that makes sense. You that laugh. Makes total sense.
Well, not only does it not make sense, but, you know, this is how it works. This is how it works with fascism and autocrats. You know, you shut down the media. He talked about doing that, actually. There was rumors that they might cancel the press briefings when he was coming into office. So, yeah, that's what we'll see more of in the days ahead, I suspect. In any event, the Trump administration press team and the president's initial note about Comey's firing pinned the decision, as you'll recall, on that memorandum from Rosenstein. But Trump threw that explanation completely out the window on Thursday night with NBC, and he said I was going to fire him regardless of recommendations. And then he added, and here's where it starts to get spooky. Then he added, James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Okie dokie then. Well, keep that in mind for the moment. You've also probably heard these reports last night about this one-on-one private dinner, this conversation that was held between Trump and Comey. We're getting there's several different versions of it, one coming from Trump, one coming from Comey's associates. This was after the inauguration between Comey and Trump, in which Trump claims that Comey asked him for the dinner to ask about keeping his job as FBI director after the inauguration. Comey, or at least his associates, say it was Trump who requested this private dinner so that Trump could then ask Comey whether the independent head of the FBI would in fact be loyal to Donald Trump. And whether now, again, according to Trump's account, whether he was being investigated by the FBI, which Trump claims Comey assured him three times he was not. The two different accounts of this dinner are just remarkable. Here was Dana Bash speaking about how insane, how frightening, how just out of the norm this entire thing has become.
It makes sense that that's the way you do business in New York. It does not make sense that that's the way you do business when you are the president of the United States and you are talking to the FBI director. This is a double whammy, because not only did he go out of bounds in admitting that he talked to the FBI director about an investigation into people who worked for him during the campaign, but in the same conversation, they talked about James Comey's job prospects and whether or not he was going to stay in that job. Well, who decides whether he's going to stay in that job? The president. I mean, it almost feels like a scene out of The Godfather, but it's not. It's real, and it's alarming. I mean, it really is. And I think what's even more alarming is that he doesn't seem to get how unusual and out of bounds this is.
You think? Yeah. It is like something out of The Godfather. It's surreal. It's scary. It just may not be quite as entertaining, at least to me, at least to those of us who have to cover this stuff and our brain is breaking. The same bizarre behavior of a sort to this dinner where he asked for loyalty and he wouldn't. Comey said, well, I'll give you honesty instead of loyalty. That same behavior, this bizarre behavior, continued this morning in this tweet. As AP describes it, in an ominous warning, President Donald Trump declared Friday that fired FBI Director James Comey had better hope there are no tapes of their private conversation. Later, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer repeatedly refused to address whether recording devices had been placed in the White House, which is what Trump is suggesting. Sean Spicer dismissed the notion that the president had threatened the former FBI director with that tweet. Spicer said the president has nothing further to add. He would not answer. He would not answer any of the press's questions about this. He basically just said the president has nothing further to add on that. Here was Sean Spicer at today's press briefing.
Did President Trump record his conversations with former FBI Director Comey?
I assume you're referring to the tweet. And I've talked to the president. The president has nothing further to add on that.
And why did he say that? Why did he tweet that? What should we interpret from that?
As I mentioned, the president has nothing further to add on that.
Are there recording devices in the Oval Office or in the residence?
As I said for the third time, there is nothing further to add on that.
Does he think it's appropriate to threaten someone like Mr. Comey not to speak?
I don't think that's not a threat. He's simply stated a fact. The tweet speaks for itself. I'm moving on.
Yeah, he won't answer.
I know.
He's not answering whether there is a recording device in the Oval Office. Now, on Friday, a person close to the former director recounted that Comey-Trump dinner, at which Trump asked for a pledge of loyalty. Comey declined, instead offered honesty. When Trump then pressed for honest loyalty, Comey told him, "You will have that," according to the Comey associate. So the Comey associate has said that Comey promised honest loyalty, whatever that means. So Spicer denied on Friday that Trump had asked Comey to pledge his loyalty. Spicer is that he was willing to deny. He wasn't willing to deny whether there was an audio recording system somewhere in the White House, but he was willing to deny that Trump asked Comey to pledge his loyalty, insisting that the president simply wants loyalty to this country and to the rule of law. All right, you can knock it off with the... Anyway, his comments, as AP notes, raise the specter of Richard Nixon, who secretly taped conversations and telephone calls in the White House, and which ultimately led to Nixon's downfall in the Watergate scandal. Trump's firing of Comey has already left him with the dubious distinction of being the first president since Nixon to fire a law enforcement official overseeing an investigation tied to the White House. They go on to note that Trump was widely known to record phone calls at his office in Trump Tower during his business career in New York, sometimes remarking to aides after a call as to whether or not he had taped that one. Meanwhile, this number two Democrat in the Senate, Dick Durbin, said that Trump was, quote, dangerous and that, quote, his credibility has been destroyed. Well, I think that happened long ago on Morning Joe. On MSNBC, Durbin said that he was dangerous because he may be obstructing justice. Maybe. And he said he feared the world would no longer take Trump at his word.
No longer.
That's exactly right. Trump, in his interview, said he had been intending to fire Comey for months and that it had nothing to do with the Russia investigation. But then he also said, in fact, when I decided to do it, I just said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made up story. It's an excuse by Democrats for having lost an election that they should have won. Now, it might be an excuse for the Democrats for having lost an election they should have won. And it may be. He called it a witch hunt in one of his tweets today. It may be a witch hunt in that regard. But here's the thing. You don't obstruct justice. It is not up to you to decide what the FBI investigates and what they do not, particularly when you are one of the people being investigated.
It seems like something like that would be kind of obvious.
I mean, but that is just out of bounds, illegal, obstruction of justice. It's an impeachable charge. He went on to say, I was going to fire Comey, regardless of recommendation. I was going to fire Comey. And, of course, AP also notes that's far different from what the White House's initial count was in the hours after Comey's firing. Multiple officials, including, and I'm happy they note this, including Vice President Mike Pence, had said that the president was just acting at the behest of Rosenstein and Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Right, that he was so moved by the recommendation that Rod Rosenstein had made that somehow that was it. But that's a narrative that he has blown out of the water.
And my question is, he got Pence once again going out and essentially lying on behalf of Donald Trump. Doesn't he ever get tired of serving as Trump's pawn in these lies? I mean, I don't know. I don't know that he gets tired of it because it's, you know, unclear. Frankly, he may not even be a pawn at all. He may be in on this whole thing. A lot of people give him a lot more credit than he deserves. He's a very accomplished liar himself, Mike Pence is, and I will discuss that momentarily. But this morning, CNN reports on a source who tells them that Comey says he is not worried about any tapes. That's a quote of conversations between him and Trump. And this thing, I mean, is just becoming a soap opera. It's a, you know, primetime soap opera, really bad, ridiculously plotted out soap opera. But that's where we are. And in a telltale sign that this is very real, the disarray right now and the confusion at the White House. Politico's hottest gold cites that Fox News Sunday's Chris Wallace was lamenting today. He said, we very much wanted somebody to rep the president's point of view on Sunday, but they aren't available and not answering the phone.
Not answering the phone?
To Fox News.
Wow.
They're not even answering the phone. That just gives you an idea how right now, how quickly things are kind of falling apart inside the White House. Anyway, speaking of Mike Pence, let's take a break, and we will be back with that story, one of several noteworthy ones that are sort of getting lost in this whole Trump-Comey shuffle this week. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Don't go away. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik.
Back home again in Indiana.
Nice.
And it seems that I can see.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thanks for sticking with us. On October 4th, 2016, this was last year, in the heat of the presidential election, October 4, in Indiana, just before the Hoosier State's October 11 deadline to register for the November 8 presidential election, in which then Indiana Governor Mike Pence was on the ticket as the vice presidential candidate on October 4. An investigation into alleged voter registration fraud had intensified rapidly on that day when state police reportedly raided the Indianapolis office of a voter registration group and confiscated computers, personal cell phones, and paperwork, according to a report from The Intercept at the time. The Intercept reported that workers at the site told them that state police had stopped one person from recording the incident at all, and that the group's lawyer had said he was unable to enter the building. State police were investigating at the time the Indiana Voter Registration Project's effort in 9 counties across Indiana after claims that the group had fraudulently registered voters. That, according to the Indianapolis Star, Indiana's Secretary of State Connie Lawson, who was a key sponsor of Indiana's 2005 photo ID law that went all the way to the Supreme Court where it was upheld, she had announced the investigation in September. According to The Intercept, Lawson alleged that, quote, nefarious actors are operating here in Indiana. She said a group by the name of the Indiana Voter Registration Project has forged voter registration, serious charges, which, of course, led to this raid at the Indiana Voter Registration Project's office. Patriot Majority is the D.C.-based group who is managing the voter registration drive in Indiana with the Indiana Voter Registration Project. Its leader, Craig Verogo, told the Intercept that it's not unusual that they would turn in questionable forms and flag them to election officials. We have gone over this many, many times over many, many years in regard to the Acorn story. You will recall that back then they were claiming that Acorn was turning in all of these fraudulent registrations. It was voter fraud, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the rule of law is that even if you get a fraudulent registration or registration that is defective in some way, you still must turn that in to officials. You flag it and say, hey, we have questions about this registration form, but you turn it in. You can't not turn it in.
Right, because as a voter registration organization, you are not the person who's supposed to decide whether that person gets registered. That's up to the Secretary of State.
The election officials or the county officials. Exactly.
To verify who you are. You don't want some schmo on the street who's getting paid to do a voter registration drive to decide whether you get to
whether
vote
it's valid or not.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, those are weasel words. words, and it's intentionally misleading for them to pretend like there was something wrong with them turning in fraudulent registrations.
Yet that's what they were pretending, that there was something, that this was some big scam. And but it wasn't unusual that they turned in those forms. What was unusual, according to election law experts at the time, is for police to raid a voter registration office and take all of their gear and, of course, do so in the proximity to an election. Just barely 1 month before an election, and in this case, about 7 days before the registration deadline would cut off in Indiana. Dan Takagi, an election law professor at Ohio State University, said that he was, at the time, said that he was worried that such a raid, if it happened in the manner described in the news reports, and it did, that it would have a chilling effect, potentially, on voter registration drives across the country just 1 month out from the election. Takagi said, "My concern is it's going to intimidate people who are registering to vote. There is nothing that affects turnout on election day more than voter registration," Takagi said. Voting registration is really the big thing. If you make it more difficult to register, you will decrease the number of people who vote. These sorts of law enforcement activities are extremely worrisome. That's what was going on in early October, October 4, in the state of Indiana. The next day, according to the Indianapolis Star, they said Indiana State Police, remember, this is the state police investigators, had searched a voter registration agency on Indianapolis's north side as they look into a voter fraud case that spans nine counties. So now you got Indianapolis Star calling it a voter fraud case, not a voter registration fraud case, but a voter fraud case that spans nine counties in Indiana. They reported that police said the growing number of involved counties leads investigators to believe that the number of fraudulent records might be in the hundreds, according to state police. The possible fraudulent information is a combination of fake names, addresses, and dates of birth with real information, the Star reported. According to a state police statement at the time, an investigation of this nature is complex, time-consuming, and is expected to continue for several more weeks or months. Victims of the activities by some agents of the Indiana Voter Registration Project may not discover they have been disenfranchised from voting. So now the police are already declaring that there are victims here, that Indiana Voter Registration Project has, you know, fraudulently disenfranchised people from voting. Again, this is the state police in the run-up to the election, just days before the registration deadline in the state of Indiana. Now, we've been, you know, talking over the many months about the, you know, the inappropriate announcements made by James Comey last year, because the Department of Justice has a rule, essentially, that you do not take these sort of actions just days prior to an election. You don't take criminal action. You don't file charges in a way that may affect elections. And here you've got the Indiana State Police going out and making these outrageous statements that this group has committed essentially massive fraud. The president, again, of Patriot Majority, Craig Verroga, said because the IVRP, the Indiana Voter Registration Project, had been specifically referenced in that statement from both the state police and from the Secretary of State, that the investigation could likely impede the processing of some 45,000 voter registration cards that had been completed through the organization across the state. And he later went on to say that another 10,000, because they shut them down, they shut this group down at the time, another 10,000 or so registrations they might have collected prior to the October 11 deadline last year. He said the IVRP uses quality control procedures in an effort to catch issues with voter registrations. He said any of the applications that had been earmarked as fraud were already earmarked by the IVRP as incomplete or incorrect when they were handed in to the counties or the state. For example, he said if someone transposes digits in a phone number or forgets to fill out their zip code, the canvasser cannot complete that information for them. They got to turn it in as is. Viroga said that card would then be flagged before being turned over to the local clerk's office. If they transpose a number and that's inaccurate, that's a mistake. He said that's not fraud. Viroga says he does not know the status of those 45,000 applications, but said the seizure of cell phones and laptops during Tuesday's search warrant impedes the organization from further registering people to vote before the October 11 deadline. The investigation, he said, is a partisan effort designed to make it harder to vote in this election. State Police Captain David Burston said at the time that the complexity of the investigation likely means that the work will continue until well after the November elections. He said, "We wouldn't be investigating if we weren't still finding issues that are indicative of fraudulent acts. This is not the Secretary of State's investigation. This is the Indiana State Police's investigation," he said. The Indiana State Police, run by who? The governor of the state of Indiana. Who was the governor of the state of Indiana at the time that all of this was going on? That would be now Vice President Mike Pence, of course. A few days later, actually on October 11, which was the registration deadline in Indiana, then vice presidential candidate Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, was speaking at a rally in Newton, Iowa, where he was asked by a distraught voter who was terribly worried, very concerned about voter fraud, all of these stories they've been hearing, you know, from places like the Indianapolis Star reporting this major effort in county after county across the state of Indiana from this Democratic-leaning group who was registering voters. She was very, very distraught about all of these reports she's hearing, wondered what Mike Pence was going to do about it in Indiana, in Iowa, all across the country. Here is some of her question and Mike Pence's response on that day.
My name is Rhonda.
Rhonda?
And I'm on social media every day, all day, nonstop, pushing Trump. And one of the biggest things I can tell you that a lot of us are scared of is this voter fraud. We are, there's a lot of us that are out here saying that we go to vote, we're going to wear red. Our lives depend on this election. Our kids' futures depend on this election. What are we going to do to safeguard our votes? Because
Girl, look,
we've seen how the Democratic Party is just crooked, crooked, crooked.
Well, look, I'll tell you, number one, it's, you know, elections are administered at the state level. They are. And I'll tell you, in the state of Indiana right now, we got a pretty vigorous investigation into voter fraud going on right now.
Ooh.
And let's make sure that our elected officials are upholding the principle of one person, one vote. And if you are concerned about voter integrity and you haven't signed up to be a poll watcher, to volunteer at a polling place, to be a part of the integrity of that process, then you need to do it.
Now, of course, I agree with his call for them to sign up to be a poll watcher, to be a poll worker and so forth. That's fine. But this vigorous investigation into voter fraud, it wasn't into voter fraud. It was into voter registration fraud. And it was at his behest. So he's got this terribly distraught woman asking her. She's so concerned that the election is going to be rigged because, you know, that's what Donald Trump had been saying and Republicans have been saying for years, that there's massive voter fraud going on. Instead of calming her down, you know, he just fed into it, this vigorous investigation into voter fraud right now. And he talked about voter integrity. As I have said many times, the voters are doing just fine. Leave them alone. If you're worried about integrity, it's the integrity of our elections themselves and the way they are run and the way they are counted and the way voters are kept from being able to vote at all and the way state police thugs are sent in to take out tens of thousands of voter registrations in the days before an election, as we saw from Mike Pence's state police force last year in October, before he then went on to scare them further with this vigorous investigation into voter fraud. That was October 11. That was the day that the registration deadline in Indiana itself. About a week or so later, as Indiana State Police were continuing their investigation into the alleged voter fraud issue in the state, One county prosecutor, the county prosecutor who would bring charges in this case, said that the charges, the talk of voter fraud is, quote, without merit. Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry told the Indianapolis Star in a statement that accusations of voter fraud are premature as the state cops were still investigating. Curry specifically called on investigators to stop discussing the investigation until it is finished. Stop putting out statements, making these claims about this group. Confidentiality, Curry said to, according to the AP at the time, confidentiality is important to allow investigators to continue their work independently and to avoid material prejudice in the matter. And yet State Police Superintendent, again, Mike Pence's State Police Superintendent, Doug Carter, had gone out, had been very vocal about charges of voter fraud. He had appeared on local TV saying things like, quote, there's voter fraud and voter forgery in every state of America. That was the superintendent of the state police in Indiana, work under Mike Pence, under the charge of Mike Pence at the time. Mike Pence, who joined in with the chorus on behalf of Donald Trump to claim, oh, you know what? Well, we had to get rid of James Comey because he said inappropriate things before an election, and law enforcement officials should never be doing that. They might prejudice the election. And yet his own state police superintendent was doing exactly that. And Mike Pence, no, did not go out and fire him, did he? The way Donald Trump fired Comey months and months later. Curry said in his statement he was worried that investigators were making statements about the alleged voter fraud case. This is Curry, the prosecutor, before the evidence was actually in. And he had encouraged the state police to stop speaking publicly about the investigation until they have finished their work. So this is like weeks after this raid. They have been talking about it the whole time. They had raided, TPM points out, they had confiscated computers, cell phones, other records. As I said, they were looking into potential allegations of voter registration fraud by the Indiana Voter Registration Project. The group focused on registering African-American voters in Indiana. Now, the Indiana Voter Registration Project had actually hired a group called Target Smart who determined that it wasn't their registrations that were bad. They were coming back and they were getting a lot of bad records. Instead, it was actually old information in the state's voter database for some 800,000 voters, which made some of their information look like it didn't match. Their new information didn't seem to match the old information. So, Desi Doyen, if you had been registered at some address in Indiana and then you moved, and you filled out a form with...
I re-registered as one would normally do with my new address.
With this group, and that got turned in, they'd say, aha, look, they're changing Desi Doyen's address. It's fraud. And apparently, they had found, when they looked at the data, some 800,000 old, dead, bad registrations. That happens. People die. People move. They move from county to county. They move from state to state. But they ended up with, you know, hundreds of thousands of bad data in the state's database. Now, Mother Jones said that the state police had stated in affidavits released after the election that they believed that among the thousands of registration forms the group turned in were some that appeared to have been forged. From the evidence presented, it seemed likely that a few canvassers had, in fact, fraudulently filled out applications, but Patriot Majority USA claimed that it was vindicated by the release of those documents, in addition to apparent evidence of forged applications, because they showed that the group staff had actually flagged those suspect applications for county authorities. So in cases where you had a temporary worker who was hired to do registration and they put some information on there that they shouldn't have, the group had flagged it and turned it in. The process worked. One of the folks with Patriot Majority USA conceded that it's possible that a few canvassers had broken the rules and forged applications, but that could not account for the accusation of large-scale fraud that was coming out of the Secretary of State's office and out of state police. She had said, remember, thousands, she said, thousands of dates of birth and first names were changed, she claimed in a statement back in October of 2016. And yet there is no evidence that any fraudulent ballots were ultimately cast in the state of Indiana. None. And everyone has since forgotten about all of that voter fraud after the election was over, it seems. They forgot about Mike Pence going out and declaring all of this voter fraud. In late January, the state police finished their investigation. They turned it over to the Marion County prosecutor to determine whether to file any charges. There have been no charges filed. Contrary to Pence's statement, a spokeswoman for the prosecutor's office stressed that the police had not investigated voter fraud. They were looking at voter registration discrepancies, and that the investigation was not into fraudulent voting. That would be ballots being cast improperly. McLeish, the spokesperson, told Mother Jones they had not yet decided whether to press charges. So shortly before leaving office, Mike Pence, when he left the governor's office to become vice president, by the way, he awarded Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson the state's highest civilian honor. And about a week or so ago, that office, the Indiana Secretary of State's office, removed about 500,000 registrations from the rolls because they said, oh, yeah, these are old and out of date. Pretty much exactly what the Indiana Voter Registration Project had tried to tell them at the time. But the deed was done. Which brings us to Thursday of this week. Amidst all of the insanity of Trump's firing of James Comey, because he was, you know, tired of the Trump-Russia investigation, which Trump has now admitted that's why. Well, on Thursday, he signed an executive order establishing a commission to review alleged voter fraud and voter suppression in the American election system, according to ABC News. There's nothing about voter suppression, actually, in the executive order. And guess who's running that commission? Vice President Mike Pence will be the chair of the commission, and the vice chair will be Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach. They're calling it the Presidential Commission on Election Integrity. Now, the reason I focused on Mike Pence is because we've talked about Chris Kobach a lot, and he's the Secretary of State of Kansas. He ran on the premise of we must stop voter fraud. He has found virtually no voter fraud. Yet he's out there claiming there's a massive voter fraud epidemic. But I wanted to highlight the fact. So a lot of people are talking about how ridiculous, absurd, and appalling it is that Kobach is on this commission. It's even more absurd that Mike Pence is leading up this commission, given the way he has dealt with pretend charges of voter fraud in his own state. The commission's review is expected to be broad in scope. It will not just address Trump's allegations about the 2016 election, but also, quote, systemic issues that have been raised over many years in terms of the integrity of the elections. Membership of the commission is still taking shape, even as Trump is poised to sign the order. This was yesterday. He has now signed it. Who is also going to be on that commission? Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson. She'll be on it as well.
How convenient.
ABC reported falsely that the commission will examine the issue of voter suppression, which would encourage Democrats to sign on to the effort. But in fact, the executive order says absolutely nothing about voter suppression. ABC added a fact check here that they contacted officials in all 50 states to ask about voter fraud in the 2016 election. They all said, or most said, it was extremely rare. There was very few incidents. In three of the four countries' most populated states, California, New York, and Florida, election officials say they found zero cases of voter fraud in the past election. And a study this month by the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law also found that 40 in 42 jurisdictions researchers had studied found there was no known incidence of non-citizens voting in 2016, which is one of the things that Chris Kobach has been claiming. He's also one of these big anti-immigration guys. Rick Hassan of UC Irvine, the election law expert over there, Had some observations about the executive order. He said, one, although it broadly states a goal to look at public confidence in the election process, it seems to do this only by demanding a study of supposed voter fraud, not, as had been rumored, voter suppression. He also notes that this is a break with the tradition of past commissions, Carter Ford after the 2000 election, Carter Baker after the 2004 election, which was ridiculous, that James Baker, who fought to keep votes from being counted in Florida in 2000, would head up a voting commission in 2004, and the Bauer-Ginsburg commission, also a bipartisan commission after the 2008 election that Obama put in place. He says this is a break with those commissions of having two well-respected bipartisan leaders in charge of the commission. It's not only led by the Republican vice president, but Kris Kobach will be the co-chair. He also says that, well, he says that alone makes this commission suspect. The presence of some members of the commission who have made it their mission in life to exaggerate or lie about the extent that voter fraud is a problem in this country today as an excuse to make it harder to register and vote makes it clear that this commission is illegitimate to begin with. He says, number three, it is not clear whether any serious Democrats or election professionals or academics who study election administrations will actually be involved in the effort. We since do have word that Matt Dunlop, Maine's Democratic Secretary of State, will be on the commission. But he said he would be the first to speak up if the panel was used as a Trojan horse to restrict access to the ballot box. I hope that's the case. So what is the purpose of this commission, asks Hassan? Well, he says it does not appear aimed at studying voter fraud in a serious way. We already know that the amount of voter fraud in the last election was very small, very, very small, he notes. There is absolutely no evidence supporting the president's outlandish claim that 3 million or more non-citizens voters voted in the 2016 election. So he says the point is either to give the president validation for his outlandish claims and or to provide a pretext for passing more laws to make it harder to register and to vote. He says as far as that pretext goes, the thing I'm most concerned about is using the report's conclusions as an excuse for Congress to pass new legislation making it harder to register and vote, such as repealing voter-friendly portions of the 1993 National Voter Registration Act, otherwise known as the Motor Voter Law, that allows you to register to vote at government agencies. Hassan says, I suspect this is the end game. He adds that we may get some insight into this if and when Kobach's notes on how to kill the National Voter Registration Act are actually released. Yes, in fact, Kris Kobach was seen during the transition period meeting with Donald Trump with a folder in his hand about how to kill the National Voter Registration Act. And people are now suing. I think it's the ACLU is now suing to try to get at those documents,
right,
that Kris Kobach shared with Trump in the transition.
Yeah, the ACLU, they filed a lawsuit yesterday to get a Freedom of Information Act request to get at those documents.
Hassan says this is not a good day for those who believe we should have a system where all eligible voters, but only eligible voters, can easily cast a ballot that will be fairly and accurately counted. It is not a good day for that, even as this executive order was either not noticed by many people or not covered adequately by many people. Voting rights advocates are trying to ring the alarm. They're calling this a sham elections panel. And so we will see what happens here. We'll cover this, I suspect, a lot in the future. Gerald Hebert, just by one way of pointing it out, he's a former Justice Department official. He now leads the Voting Rights and Redistricting Program at the Campaign Legal Center. He says Kobach has always been the Chicken Little of voter fraud. He has indeed. but I just wanted to make sure that people understand it's not just Chicken Little, not just Kris Kobach.
No, this is very serious.
It's also Mike Pence who's on this thing. I'll leave this go for the moment, but Charlie Pierce, who was writing about all of this madness between the Comey affair And indeed, this executive order, Charlie Pierce over at Esquire, said, so this executive order for this voter fraud commission is the culmination of an ongoing bag job that began at the same time that Camp Runamuck opened its gates in January. However, it has as its basis in the fragile psyche of a very dangerous man who raves at his television set when there is no other audience available and who would howl at the wind if it disturbed his hair. This, he says, is King Lear with a nuclear strike force.
Wow.
Yeah. Nuclear strike force, both literally and figuratively, when it comes to undermining our entire process of democracy in these United States. And that is underway now. All right, a quick break, and we're back with some other stories that I've been trying to get to this in this busy week. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik.
Well, I'm working in a coal mine, going down, 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 working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. One of the stories that I want to make sure that we get to this week, because I don't want this to disappear. I don't want this particular lie to go away, at least without being noted here. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who has been busy lying all week long on behalf of the Trump administration. She's the deputy White House spokesperson. This was last week, I think, late last week, responding to the jobs report that had come out. It was a good jobs report that came out for the month of April, I guess. And the White House was eager to trumpet those results. Sarah Huckabee Sanders came out and said at a briefing, we especially saw expansion in the sectors of the economy the president has had a particular focus on, construction, manufacturing, and mining. Later in the briefing, she said, primarily the places where we saw the most job growth in this jobs report were in manufacturing, coal miners, and other places. AP did a fact check to point out the actual facts that manufacturing, coal mining, and construction together accounted for less than 6% of the job growth that they saw. Of the 211,000 jobs that were added, 173,000 were in services, in the service sector, while manufacturing jobs only grew by, wait for it, 6,000 jobs. Construction jobs were up by 5,000, and coal mining, just 200 jobs.
But hey, she said it was coal mining, so it must be true.
So 11,000 or so of the jobs were in the areas that she had specified, that she described as most of the job growth out of the 211,000 jobs that were added in April. She just came out and lied. She just made it up out of whole cloth.
Only this 200. Is what,
and
wow.
Remember, Trump was tweeting this morning. What did he claim? That, the people on the podium, they can't know everything. I'm a very active president. Altogether, hiring was strongest in lower-paying industries last month. One such category included hotels, restaurants, casinos, and amusement parks. They added 55,000 jobs. That would be the most of any sector, of any major sector. Healthcare added 37,000 jobs. Compare that to coal mining jobs, 200. The April gains mean, by the way, this year that the economy has been adding an average of 185,000 jobs a month. Well, that's pretty good. Maybe Donald Trump was right. He's good for the economy. Oh, wait. That 185,000 jobs a month, that matches last year's pace under Barack Obama. So, no change. Didn't want that to escape. Didn't want that little liar Sanders Huckabee getting away with it. One more story before we get out here. After Hurricane Matthew slammed into North Carolina last October, triggering evacuations and killing more than 20 people, state officials went to the federal government for help. The state asked for $929 million, most of which would go toward initiatives like fixing homes damaged by flooding, supporting farmers who lost livestock, and funding mental health services for survivors. This according to Newsweek. So they got hit with this last October, Hurricane Matthew. Remember that, Des?
Oh, definitely.
20 people were killed. And the state goes to the federal government and asks, you know, for money to help the farmers who Republicans and Donald Trump pretend to love. Infrastructure jobs, thousands of them to rebuild here, which Trump says, you know, he wants to spend, what, $1 trillion, dollar infrastructure package.
You know, and infrastructure jobs, rebuilding roads and bridges that get washed out by floods, you know, those are jobs that can't be outsourced.
And you remember, of course, the reason that they all the Republicans and Donald Trump, that they all wanted Keystone XL to the pipeline was because of all those jobs.
All those manufacturing construction jobs.
Even if they were temporary construction jobs. You know, with all of the actual money, the big profits ultimately going to the oil company and pipeline owners, still they pretended, hey, this would put people, thousands of people to work. They asked for $920 million, and this week the state discovered that they are likely to get from the federal government $6.1 million, less than 1% of the amount requested. The North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, who is a Democrat, angrily called out the discrepancy this week in a letter to Donald Trump, to House Speaker Paul Ryan, to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson. He wrote to families across eastern North Carolina, need help to rebuild and recover, and it's an incredible failure by the Trump administration and congressional leaders to turn their backs. Matthew, he said, was an historic storm, and we are still working every day to help families return home and rebuild their communities. North Carolinians affected by this storm cannot be ignored by the Trump administration and congressional leadership. Oh, really, Governor? Have you met this Trump administration and congressional leadership?
Yeah, have you met the Republican congressional leadership? I mean, they do this all the time. This is what they do when they are in power. They do not back up individual communities when they need their help the most.
Cooper attached a list of the initiatives that would not be funded due to the shortage in funding. This would be repairs for homeowners, renters, and people in public housing, health and mental health services, upgrades for storm infrastructure, and to buy out and to elevate and reconstruct nearly 4,000 properties. They're trying to elevate them so they don't get flooded again. These are people who have been flooded out now for months. This is jobs, 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 as Republicans like to say. And it's money also into the local economy, which this local economy needs very badly at this point. Matthew, in some places, dropped a foot of rain. Thanks, climate change. It caused nearly 82,000 people had to register for aid through FEMA. About 98,000 homes in 50 counties were damaged. And as of last month, 270 families are still living all of these months later in motels and other transitional shelters because of the disaster, according to AP. Earl Nail told WRAL, I haven't gotten paid yet. But I hear billions and millions to send overseas and doing this and doing that. Billions for building walls, he said. Come on, man. You know how many people out there are suffering? Yeah, well, they do know how many people, but they apparently do not care. And now, you know, this is North Carolina, frankly, the swingiest of swing states these days. So you would think that Trump and congressional Republicans would actually give a damn.
Right.
But maybe now that they have, as you suggested with your sniffs over there, Desi Doyen, maybe because they have a Democratic governor now, they just have to say no matter how much it might hurt them in the next election. Maybe they don't care. I don't know. Or maybe they just don't give a damn because they've got, you know, they got missiles to launch and taxes to cut and people to knock off of health care and
walls to build.
Billions they spend, you know, to make the largest military force ever known to humanity even larger. So, hey, sorry about that, North Carolina. Good luck, because the next hurricane is likely around the corner. You know what else is, it's not yet around the corner, but it's getting closer. The 2018 elections. Maybe folks in North Carolina will remember that next time. That North Carolina, you'll recall back in 2008, went very narrowly for Barack Obama. In 2012, it went swung the other way, went very narrowly for Mitt Romney. And then in what year is this? In 2016, it went for Donald Trump, who just signed the bill giving North Carolina 1% of what they had requested for their hurricane recovery. I hope they remember it next year. In any event, my thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is greatly appreciated. My thanks also to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue to do what we try to do every day on the air here. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find, follow us, and share us far and wide on the Twitters and the Facebooks at The Brad Blog. Let everyone know what a fantastic guy Michael Pence is, by the way, when you get the chance. All right, that's it for now. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.